Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who finds things to complain about like David finds hidden immunity idols, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast, voicemail edition here for episode number 5 of Millennials versus Gen X. And today, we're going to be joined by Ali Lasher, host of a number of our Rehap Up podcasts, back with us to talk through everything from this episode. So looking forward to having her back here with us. And this has been a very busy day of podcasting for me. Did the know-it-alls, did the exit interview, did the recap podcast all in one day so far. I'm sure there's been another point in RHAP history where I did this many podcasts in one day, but I do not recall that at this time. So maybe if Jordan Kalish can come up with the answer to that, that would be useful to know. So all those podcasts are up on our iTunes feed if you want to check those all out. And of course, today, as I mentioned on some of the other shows we've done today, is also my birthday. So a very busy podcasting day here. So one more podcast to go, if you are so inclined, and if I may be so bold, the one thing I would want from my birthday, if you've never done it, I really do appreciate any feedback and star ratings, honest reviews only, honest star ratings only on our iTunes page. As you're listening to the show, if you've never done it before, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. If you could leave us an honest star rating, it takes 2 seconds. Once you're there, you can write a review too, if you want, throw some RHAP phrases in there. We love that. And subscribe if you've never done that before. On the iTunes page, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Again, truly do appreciate that. It helps more and more people find the show, and it's the best thing you can do on iTunes. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to have this guest back with us on the voicemails. It's been some time since we had her back on the voicemail, so here she is, I believe, making her second appearance on the Rob Has a Podcast voicemail. You can hear her on the challenge and Are You the One Rehap Ups here on robhasawebsite.com and the newly finished RuPaul's Drag Race Rehap Up. Please welcome back the great Ali Lasher.
Rob, it's great to be back. And let me be, I think, or I hope this is the last podcast you're going to do today, the last podcaster to wish you a happy damn birthday.
Oh, thank you very much, Ali. Appreciate it. Yeah, this is the fourth Survivor podcast today about last night's Survivor, and hopefully the last time we go through this, but we have a lot of fun stuff planned. So happy to have you back here and happy to get into this and hopefully have a few laughs about this week's episode of Survivor.
I somehow feel guilty. Like, I'm the guest on the show, but I still somehow feel guilty for taking up your time on your birthday night.
No. This is like, we're going to have a lot of fun. This is like the birthday party where whatever's going to go on later, I'm going to, sing, have a cake with my kids and my wife. Like, it'll be nice, but I doubt we'll have a lot of laughs. I don't think that's going to happen. There won't be like a lot of humor going on there.
I have two problems with that. One, I like to keep the bar very low, so I already feel like expectations are entirely too high.
Yes.
And two, people who listen to my challenge podcast with Brian Cohen will know how I feel about wasted and or unappreciated cake and other baked goods.
No, it'll be appreciated. But really, what is like the funniest thing that's going to happen? Like somebody like Sokolowski's one of my kids with the cake or something like that. It's really what's going to happen. So excited to, this is really, we'll tell some jokes. We'll talk about Survivor. We'll answer some questions and it'll be a nice time.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. So let's get into talking about the millennials versus the Gen Xers. Of course, do you have an update for some of the people that maybe not have heard you on RuPaul or the challenge since you went off to law school?
The one thing I'll say is people definitely don't give an S about what I'm doing in my life. People made that clear after the Big Brother podcast. But I will say I have been inspired since being in law school for a new off-season project for you. So I don't have to do any more work. I feel like there should be an off-season podcast on when you move to a new city, how to identify other local weirdos and or I call it survivor baiting. I have great experience in this. It started out where basically somebody mentioned Nicaragua in like intellectual conversation during orientation. I was like, I'd hate to go anywhere. Survivor's been filmed. Looks left, looks right. No one reacts.
Yeah.
That was just like me, like slowly, casually coming out as a Survivor fan. And then I had to resort to offering to the 20 people in my, everyday life here, I will provide the alcohol if you just show up and agree to watch the premiere. Mm-hmm. And I have this, tell me if this is what having kids is like, because I've been sharing Survivor with them and they've really attached to it. I mean, like 10 people now, I feel like Jeff with the people on the
street.
You're
their leader.
I mean, I pause it to explain that no, people don't hook up on the show all the time. This isn't normal. Mm-hmm. People see this and are like, oh, classic reality television. I'm like, no, this is hashtag unprecedented. They love the hashtags. Unprecedented was a hilarious big deal to them. It's great. I feel like I'm introducing like small children to the beautiful world of Survivor.
Well, that's very exciting that you're bringing in a whole new generation. Maybe they could one day be at the finale and talk about how they got into the show and how they don't miss an episode now. And they're super duper fans because of Ally Lasher. You know, I do think that the move, if you want to low key attract other Survivor fans, I think it's actually that you wear a buff, like not like on your head, but like just put it like on your wrist and other Survivor fans will come up to you and they'll say like, hey, like nice buff Survivor fan. Like, I think that I'm being dead serious about this. Like, don't wear it like on your head, like, or as a, like a bandana.
In the event that young impressionable ears are listening to this, do not go to college and just wear a buff around. I totally disagree with that advice.
You couldn't
because
just
the majority
wear
of people will not know what the hell you're doing. And I will say in Max Dawson's Survivor Summit class, which I will say the original Survivor Summit happened at Northwestern. I think mm-hmm. they stole that from us. And it was much more consequential than the television show.
Yes.
Cochran admitted to being someone who wore a buff around in high school. And I was wearing a buff in the audience for tribe class reasons. And he like gestured to me and I was like, oh, I did not wear this in high school. I don't want to relate to you on that level.
Yeah. Look, I'm not saying wear it over your head, but if you want to like have like tie it to your backpack or, you know, wear it as a scrunchie. Do people still have a scrunchie? Is that still a thing?
There's a whole Sex and the City episode that addresses whether or not people wear scrunchies. So
look,
I'll leave it to that.
If I'm just saying, if you really want to do this, if you really want to find if there are other people like your Pokemon bait of to get other Survivor fans, then what's that called in Pokemon Go, Allie?
Bait? I mean, there's like a lure module.
A lure. Yes. Your Survivor lure. Yes. Then I think that's what it is. I think it's the buff.
Look, if you're of age, offer people alcohol. I think that's really the move. If you're not of age, watch by yourself.
So you have to just like bring people into your home and give them alcoholic drinks and then just hope that they'll sit through the Survivor episode?
People loved it. They love it.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned your backstory of that you went to Northwestern as an undergrad and you were a student in Max's class, as many of the listeners know. And also you share that in common with Hannah from this season. But I have no idea in terms of the timeline. Were you there at Northwestern at the same time that she was?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I was season one, the OG season. Hannah was season two, but friend of Hannah's and friend of mine, Molly Block, was also like in season one. And we would go back, you know, Max would tell us, oh, Rob's sister Nina's Skyping and you're going to want to show up for this, et cetera, et cetera. So I would show up to the classes when guests were there. And the very little interaction I had with season two, and I think I said this to your patrons, like, Hannah is someone, if anybody's like, oh, Hannah has a connection to Max, I don't know that that's like out there. I don't want to put it out there. But you just knew from barely knowing Hannah that her like life's work was going to be to get on Survivor. Like, she is a super duper fan.
Super duper fan?
Survivor super duper fan.
So when I heard she was going to be on the season, I was like nothing but thrilled for her. So I actually did have dinner with her arranged by Max and the aforementioned Molly Block in LA a couple weeks before I came to school. And just like she mentioned very, very little about Survivor. I think it's still a little PTSD, like, and you definitely don't want to talk to the people on the street about how things went. But she does express just even in conversation, like very passionate opinions. Like I do. She did say like Kappa Kappa Survivor in like the first episode. And I think I was just like perked up to that she does have some traditionally like nerdy opinions, which I'm all about. I mean, I said lure module, but anyway, I am nervous that like she was kind of like Purple Hannah this episode. I feel like they probably have material just based on knowing her to just kind of like leave her like to the social media wolves. We'll see. I'm rooting for her just based on Northwestern pride.
Okay. But you guys aren't like super tight or anything like that. It's just that you guys are just acquaintances from college.
Not even. I mean, she acted like she had no idea who I was. So
oh, big time.
It might be. She big timed me.
like Steve
Which
Fishback?
Is probably true. Why would you know who I am? But yeah. Now I'm talking about a show she's on. So
yeah,
it's definitely good for her.
Now the shoe's on the other foot. Okay.
No, I'm saying like she's right because she's on the show and I'm on the podcast.
No. This is right where you want to be, Allie. So, okay.
Oh, I have no interest in being on the show. Okay.
Well, good for that backstory because I had no idea who's in what school at what time. So I just assume that everybody's all there at the same time.
Yeah, we're both millennials, just a year apart.
So let's get into talking about this. And I'm glad that we have you here to talk about this because a lot of people have some questions for you about the America's favorite couple, Figgler / Figtails / Failer. So let's start things off with a voicemail. This is from our buddy Andrew, has a question for you.
Hey, Rob and Allie, this is Andrew Kirk calling from California. My question for Allie is, if Ryan Devlin, the host Are You the One, told Fig and Taylor it's time for the truth booth, what would pop up on that screen? Would it be a perfect match or would it be a no match? Thanks, guys.
All right, now, Allie, you have to explain this to me because I don't know anything about the Are You the One. So what is this? Is it a truth booth?
First of all, Andrew, I love this question. Okay, so basically the premise of Are You the One, without getting too far down the MTV rabbit hole, which will take us into like a deep, dark, depressing place. So basically the premise is there are 10 men and 10 women scientifically matched, scientifically in quotes, matched to be perfect matches. And the only way to determine if someone is your confirmed match is once a week people get voted into the truth booth, which is just basically a shack with lasers and a television screen. And after they fake scan their bodies, they tell them if they're a perfect match or not a match. I actually like Figgy and Taylor together. I don't like, you know, what it's doing for the show. I do like that Figgy like seems to kind of be, not to borrow from your conversation today with Kimmy, but Taylor seems to be Figgy's puppet here in this episode, but
you're the puppet.
If you're willing to kiss someone, how many days, I mean, even 2 days into Survivor, and we're seeing next week they're going to be kissing on the island, then God bless them. I hope they're a perfect match because that
Rock
is
on.
That is absolutely disgusting.
Okay. Well, this is leading us right into the next question because Lawson calls in to ask about should Figgy and Taylor be changing up their behavior now post-swap. Here's Lawson.
Hey, Robin Alley. This is Lawson. I'm wondering what you think of Figgy and Taylor and their interaction after the tribe swap. Do you think Figgy should have just come right out and said, Taylor, I don't even like you?
So what do you think of this, Allie? Because we had where there were two schools of thought here, where you had Taylor who was saying like, hey, you know,
rock on.
Yeah, let's see. Who cares? Let's just make out. And Figgy is like, no, not in front of everybody.
First of all, I assume Lawson's from the Midwest. I love when someone calls me Allie. It's like, feels like home. So, I want to say also, I want to hate everything about Figgy and Taylor in this aspect, but the name Figtails is just too good for even a like tried and true hater like me. So I ship just based on the name Figtails. I wonder why Figgy is like blowing the whistle now. Like she should have had, where were these instincts 2 weeks ago? It's almost like, you think these millennials are going to keep this to themselves? Forget the fact that apparently everyone in Gen X can just tell that they're together. Like there is literally nothing else to talk about. You're on the beach. All these Survivor contestants talk about is how boring it is between, you know, lag time on reality television. This is like you're in high school, but you're the only two people there. Like literally you're all there is to talk about. I don't know why now. Like I get the instinct. The instinct is good, but like, too late, Larry, over here.
Yeah, you don't want to be too late, Larry. And Figgy is saying to shut it down. And Taylor is very much against this idea.
Screw that.
Yeah, screw that idea, Figgy. because he wants to make out. He doesn't care who sees it. Is there something romantic about that?
I honestly cannot get past the hygiene of it. I do want to ask you, like, what's worse, like actually just being a couple in front of people or watching Taylor mouth "You're so hot," which was like the most cringeworthy moment. It's like a tie between that and like Hannah not leaving Zeke alone for me for most cringeworthy moment this season.
Which was worse for me?
Which is worse? I will default to your survivor expertise. You're on the island. Which is more annoying? Just seeing them be an item or watch like a repressed Taylor like try to release his sexual energy in another way?
Well, am I one of the participants in the Zeke, Adam, Hannah triangle?
No. I brought that up for reference, but let's just say you're Ken, Jess, or Adam. Let's say you're Adam, because I feel like Adam knows more about it. So would you rather just see it, like, whatever, or would you rather see, like, Taylor pining for Figgy from a distance?
I think I'd rather see the pining than the actual, like, copulation going on out there, right?
And then you don't get the chance to make, like, the classic foolproof joke of, get a room.
Come on, you guys, get a room. Well, I'm glad you have led us into Adam, because that is what our next question has to do with and what he should do in this predicament. What should the super duper fan do in this spot?
Hey, guys, Steve Davis calling. Is it a no-brainer for Adam to join forces with Jessica and Ken? All three of them were at the bottom of their previous tribes, but this impacts the game in several ways. Not only do you get out from underneath, but then you break up a power couple. And then it also takes away from the numbers of the millennials that were gunning for Adam. We'd like to hear your take on this. Thanks.
Okay, Allie. So on the know-it-alls with Steven, I said, Adam, look, you know what to do. It seems like this is a slam dunk move, but is there more than meets the eye here for Adam to flip to the Gen Xers?
It's tough. Only like, it's actually funny. So when the orange team, I'm just going to orange team. Now I'm like going to get shit on. Like,
we all get a 1 week grace period on this.
The orange tribe lost the challenge. I was actually thought that the purple tribe was the only one where I like wasn't sure what was going to happen if they went to tribal, which we'll talk about. I actually didn't think the CC blindside was so shocking. I think Adam in this instance would be almost all talk. Like, we get the confessional of him saying, like, you know, I don't remember the exact words, but like implying that he would bond with Ken and go with Ken and Jessica. But here, if you're concerned about winning challenges, I feel like Jessica's your biggest liability. You get to keep Ken and Figgy and Taylor, like, our assets in the challenge. And I don't know if Adam would have the guts here to pull the trigger. And I don't know that it necessarily would automatically be the best move. I'm curious to hear your thoughts if I'm just like talking out of school here.
No. And from what I understand, you are in school, so that's fine. So in terms of this relationship between the Adam, Figgy, Taylor triangle, I want to actually defer to one of the secret scenes from this week and a little bit of just how much of a third wheel Adam is in this millennial triad.
We're like
12-year-olds. No. We have to. First off, that's a little creepy, Figgy, that talking about Too Late Larry, that you know, we're like 12-year-olds. Like, please. I don't even know that I didn't even know another person when I was 12 years old, Allie.
I'm playing Pokemon Go and I'm 25, so yeah. Don't talk to me about 12.
What 12-year-olds are these? Back to Figgy and Taylor.
I'm a millennial and I went into this game not really concerned about the money. You know, $1 million will get you 10 years of doing nothing but fun. But man, if you have like a really cool partner like Figgs, you're going to have fun forever.
Yeah. What's the conversion, Allie, of Figgy to millions of dollars?
That is spoken like someone who's going to be poor the rest of their life. $1 million is 10 years of doing nothing and then having a blank resume of 10 years doing nothing and no money.
Yeah, well, you know, you could do a lot of stuff with $1 million and just like hang out all day. But like, I do that anyway right now. I don't even have $1 million.
I'm like so nauseous again because like, Am I overstating, like, my morning breath is so foul, and to imagine that day in and day out just being piled up, no amount of, like, brushing with sugar cane or whatever they use, or bamboo, is going to convince me that this isn't the nastiest thing I've ever seen on television.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point.
That's disgusting.
Yes. Truer words have never been said. Is this, do we feel like this is a Natalie and James situation? Sorry for any of the non-Big Brother people, but is Taylor more into Figgy than Figgy is into Taylor?
Is Taylor more into Figgy than Figgy is into Taylor? No, I think that Figgy is equally into Taylor.
I don't know. I don't see it. I feel like they're going to get back and Taylor's going to be left alone without his $1 million.
Yeah.
And without the girl.
I don't hot think that's take. The case. That is a hot take. All right, so let me just get to the part of this. This is a long secret too, but let me get to the part of this that involves Adam. So just to set the stage, so Figgy is sitting with Adam and Taylor is getting coconuts for her.
Yeah.
Thanks, bruh.
Thanks, Brisky.
Thanks,
that's
bro.
Adam.
Thanks, bro. We want Kenobi.
Thanks, hermano.
Oh, thanks, Abraham Lincoln.
What?
Just saying different bros.
Yeah. That Figgy is like shutting it down. She does not want to hear about Adam's thanks, Abraham Lincoln.
I don't know if Figgy like gets what audience perception is going to be, but like, don't come for Adam.
Thanks, Abraham Lincoln.
No, she's lucky that's a secret scene.
Yeah. She's just shutting him down.
Thanks, Abraham Lincoln.
What? What are you even talking about? Get out of here.
I don't want to insinuate that Figgy is not in touch with American history. But that seems like a pretty easy easy bro name to get. I don't know what her confusion is.
Well, he's like making jokes and like being sort of like the Rob Schneider copy guy. And she's just like saying bro other ways. She's like, brah, bro, hermano.
This interaction would be enough for me to turn on my alliance, or not my alliance, but on my original tribe and vote one of these people out. I got to be honest.
So you think Adam could turn for Ken and Jessica?
I didn't until I heard the secret scene. Like, this is insufferable.
He's just not on their frequency.
Like, which is the biggest compliment you can give a person, I think.
So I do think that Adam is going to ultimately flip. Just from the way that they're showing the Figgy and Taylor interaction also. Like, Taylor is so confident.
He does have that insurance that if he does turn and things are getting... like in the next vote, if he turns on one of them and then they merge or in another vote, like he does have the insurance of an idol, which I think can make him a more confident player. But I do. The only reason I was hesitant to say, oh, automatically no brainer flip with Jessica and Ken is that he doesn't strike me as somebody who would only vote for someone because they were annoying or like an emotional play. Like I do have faith that he would be able to make the best move strategically. But now that we see Gen X is going out, he may see like they come on in guys and CC's gone. It may make him more comfortable to cut a millennial.
Do you think that we could potentially get some sort of either Bubba think about the merge or Jeff Varner type we got a rat type thing where we go to a challenge and Zeke could signal to Adam like, hey, like I got some good stuff going on over here. So get rid of one of the millennials that we don't want to work with.
I think the difference is this is almost like doesn't need to be said because when they walk in a 3-2 Gen X advantage and a Gen X gets voted off, I think Adam has to feel pretty secure that something good has happened on their tribe. Like that's not a fluke, right?
Yeah.
Like Michelle or Zeke has had to put in good work. I think Adam will have faith that it was Zeke and move forward on that. I don't know that Zeke is that impulsive. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, I don't think that needs to happen.
So you do think Adam will be bolstered by the fact that when he comes into the next tribal and Zeke is still in the game, that he'll be feeling good.
I think he's definitely going to be excited and it's definitely going to come as a surprise just based on the numbers alone. I mean, a lot of them, like a lot of the confessionals we saw in reaction to the new tribes was just, oh, I'm in the minority or I'm in the majority and I feel good. So to see that the first tribe coming back with a clear majority of Gen X cut a Gen X is going to like speak volumes.
Do you feel like Ken will be able to woo Adam?
Woo? Woo's not on this tribe. I think it's like going to take very little work to woo Adam. I think they've already been wooed. And now I'm just picturing woo. I'm very distracted. I think he'll be able to woo... Adam. I think he already has, and I don't think it takes much because I think Adam already was at the bottom of his tribe at the hands of Figgy and Taylor. He voted against Figgy, right? In that, and he disclosed that to Ken.
Yes, he did.
So I think he's looking to be wooed, and this is just going to give him, you know, that extra confidence he needs potentially.
Yeah, I was surprised that he just came out and said, I was the one that voted for Figgy. And Ken is like, working with the millennials is one way to go, but you could work with us too.
I have a lot of feelings on Ken. Are questions going to come up about Ken, or should I just take this opportunity?
Let's, I mean, we're here. We're here.
All right. Ken is all types of crazy. I think.
No, you can't say that.
Josh Wigler takes credit for being like high on Ken first. I'm going to take credit for being down on Ken first.
Down on Ken. Oh no.
I mean, I'm not down. I'm out on him just completely. Like,
forget Hannah. You're going to hear it from Twitter.
He
now
has so much, like, so many issues with respect. Like, you're not here to be respected. You're here to win $1 million. Get your respect from the people in your life at home. I don't
need these
understand
millennials to respect my authority.
To go, I have a whole number of issues with the whole Lucy Ken ordeal, including Lucy's exit interview, that I don't even want to touch. But
why?
I think it's like ridiculous that Lucy feels like she has to be a typical woman to, like, she belongs in the kitchen and Ken belongs at the dinner table. Like, I had so many issues with that. And
so
I
you
hope
have issues
Lucy
with
doesn't
Lucy and Ken?
I hope Lucy doesn't bring that back to her life at home. If your life at home is working for you, don't change it because crazy, I was off the grid for 5 years, Ken comes in and tells you how to live. Like, that was so crazy. And for all of those reasons, I'm out on Ken.
Wait, but hold on. I feel like that Lucy has some sort of preconceived notion about how men should be treated, how women should be treated, and how men want to be treated, and how they want to be spoken to. And that just didn't jive with what Ken wanted. But I don't know if she necessarily was going to change up how she was living her life because of Ken, right?
No, I thought in your exit interview, which I also was squirming because then you're like, I had a great exit interview with Lucy. And I was like, no. When Lucy comes on and she's like, you know, men want to be spoken to a certain way. And like, you still have to remember, like, you're a woman and they're a man. I was just like, no, 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 no.
Yeah, well, I thought I said in that spot that I said, look, you know, that there's no blanket rule on how anybody wants to be talked to or how you should be talking to people. I think it's a case by case basis.
And One World was the best season of Survivor.
What? Are you saying that I'm changing up the what I said? Like when Steven claims that he likes Survivor One World now?
Yeah, I didn't intend to come for you this hard. All I'm saying is Ken's got something. There's a screw loose. Something is wrong. I don't even like
I mean,
Ken.
I didn't interrupt Lucy, but it was, when it was my turn to talk again, I'm pretty sure that's what I said.
I have to go back to the tape. You might be right. You might be right.
You vindicated.
So let us know in the comments.
I've got that everyone's podcast gonna come for on me. Vinyl and the texture says, yeah. So, yeah, we'll see.
You don't think something's off. You don't see something, you know, for a man that good looking to be that concerned with like everything else. I feel like something is wrong here.
Well, what are you saying about Ken?
I'm just getting bad vibes. Like, how millennial of me? Like, I don't have many reasons, but I'm just not feeling his vibe. I think now twice he's having a respect issue, which makes absolutely no sense to me. And I don't know, the way that he like approached Jessica, I thought was completely wrong. Like, to just go up to her without feeling her out and establishing any trust and just be like, oh, you're going to get voted out tonight by your alliance and trust me. And just like think that that was going to be concrete and not have any anticipation of this being a sensitive issue, I thought was just him expecting everyone to like respect his opinion on or respect his authority over everyone else. I'm just getting some creepy vibes from him. But more than this,
creepy.
I'm like furious about how Jessica handled coming back to camp and getting back in bed with Ken.
So dreamy. All right. So hold on a second. Let me just get this
getting
straight.
Ahead of myself.
All right. Because we're putting so much stuff out on the table right now. So what are the times that you feel like Ken had respect issues? You felt like that he was upset with Jessica for not respecting him and then also with Lucy for how she was treating him?
No. Oh, so this wasn't his issue. I'm sorry. I just searched respect, control F, respect in my notes. he was like, I like Adam because Adam is respectful and polite.
Yeah.
And Lucy was a problem because Lucy was not respectful and polite. Like, so what the hell is with up politeness. Your butt about respect?
Yeah.
I don't understand why you're making decisions based on, I can respect you all day and then I'm going to write your name down. I don't understand why he's like so concerned with how he's spoken to and how he's treated.
Yeah. I don't know. But if that's his thing, that, you know, I can't begrudge him that if that's how he looks at the world, like if somebody has good manners and, you know, is respectful, then that's very important to him. It's like, okay, that, you know, maybe not the most important thing to everybody, but you know, I won't kill him for, if that's how he feels about stuff.
It's really that like, that untouchable feeling of just like, or not intangible feeling of, something is off there. Like I'm putting the pieces together here and I'm feeling when Lucy says like, hey, Ken, can you get firewood? And wants him to be like,
what's the magic
May
word?
You please get firewood, Ken. Like, please, especially in this environment, do what you will off the grid in Maui or, you know, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, like wherever you are, do how you will. If you're in
language
Survivor.
Language is beautiful. So why don't you use the nice words?
Yeah, exactly. When you said like, may you please like that, or what's the magic word? Like, that is so gross to me.
Okay. So you feel like that
it's getting Ken, hot. It's getting
you have
hot
to walk
here.
On eggshells around Ken.
And yeah, it's like, you don't need to walk on eggshells on Survivor. At least you shouldn't, like, Ken needs to be getting dogged more. Unfortunately, I don't think it's coming back to him. And maybe because he's a man, dare I say it, that he's like, allowed to have these, like the person who disrespects him goes home. Whereas if a woman was like, may you get this firewood? Like, I feel like it would be different. I don't know. There's just something weird about Ken.
Okay. That's interesting. Let's take it from the Gen X Jessica side of things. Okay. So you're mad at her for getting back together, for basically Zakiing to the Pauly Califiore of Ken, where he didn't use the veto on her. He could have saved her. He did not. And she figuratively is back in bed with him.
Figgy. There's something there. It's not that I have a lot of, I think this was the right move in terms of like, you come back from a vote where you wronged someone and you need to kind of apologize. What I thought was all kinds of stupid was telling him about the legacy advantage. It happened to work out in her favor that they would then swap to the same tribe and that Ken would be so receptive. I want to know from you, do you think Ken understood the legacy advantage when he said she's going to share that with me? Did he think she can share the advantage or that like she shared the information?
I mean, based on what we know it is, it doesn't make a lot of sense what he said. He said that she's going to share her legacy with me. Like, I don't know if we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, I'm getting off the rails. What my and I'm not Eliza Orland's results oriented here. I'm just like, in the moment, I thought you come back, you put your head between your legs. That's when you're nauseous. You put your tail between your legs and you apologize to Ken. Fine. But you already have a target because he doesn't trust you because you didn't trust him. And to now say, I also have this advantage, and if I'm voted out, I would have given it to you, is only another incentive for him to slit your throat. And he has no loyalty to you because you already didn't trust him. So I thought this was just like,
no,
I have
crazy.
A huge target on me, and let me just make it bigger.
It's the equivalent of like, you get into like a big fight with somebody and that person tries to kill you, and then you patch things up with them by saying, hey, I just want to let you know that in the interest of trust and getting this relationship back on the right foot, I've made you the primary beneficiary in my life insurance policy. Okay. So if anything happens to me, you will get a large sum of money. So just so we're in the interest of trust, that's what I want to do here.
Exactly. And I think it only worked on Ken because Ken misunderstood the policy.
Yeah. But in whether Jess like stumbled into this or, you know, she happened to be pushing the right buttons to unlock the Ken code, which is just respect and politeness to Ken, like coming to him by like offering like, you know, when you come, if you come to his house with dinner and you bring dessert, he's like, wow, that was a really sincere gesture. Like, he's really moved by that.
Good for them. We'll see how far this goes.
So that she knows what buttons to push with Jess. You know, I wanted to ask you, as an aspiring lawyer, are you very much pulling for the legal eagles this season in Jess and Chris?
I mean, it definitely helped lure some people into watching it here. I will say, I am so disappointed, and this was mentioned on one of the podcasts last week, like, how can Jess, as somebody who's trained in observational and analytical skills, not decipher the very tricky code that is Lucy saying, I'm voting out Jess at the tribal council last week? I mean, that was all kinds of, I mean, keep saying all kinds of crazy, all kinds of stupid. It was all kinds of something.
Yes.
And I was very, very disappointed to see that she couldn't pick up on that. I mean, if anything, if I were on the island with her, like, I would see her as somebody who will pretty much believe anything the Alliance tells them. Like, it was painted in black and white for her, and she still somehow missed the boat.
Well, maybe it was some sort of a decoy that she thought maybe that, oh, we're going to really throw Cece off the track.
I mean, okay. I doubt it. I just really think she was...
Yeah, like it's a balance beam.
How often does that happen successfully? I mean, I feel like that's the biggest, like, stick to the plan, you know, motivator. I don't know. What is it? Insider? Words escape me right now. But I feel like that never really, it happened a little bit in this tribal. But I want to say, for the most part, like, you can take somebody at their long rant at tribal council.
I don't know how often people are really pulling a full-on decoy at tribal council, but I think pretty regularly. I think that people try to stay committed to their script.
So are you saying it's a live tribal?
It's like, not necessarily live tribal, but I do think that you can't always really read too much into what people are saying at tribal council, because then, you know, just like going back to the original, like, stick to the plan, where Reed is like going on and on about what he's going to be doing, and Keith's like, whoa, hold on there. Let's not get hasty here. So
you would think, though, that if Ken tells Jessica that Lucy's going to vote you out, Lucy's main priority, if she wasn't going to vote her out, would be to try her damnedest to get Jessica to believe that she's not going to vote her out. And instead, she was just like, yeah, I was going to vote her out. So to me, it's like counterintuitive of what, like, someone in Lucy's position not voting Jessica out would have been doing.
Yeah, the whole thing is really weird going back to that tribal council, because in my interview with Cece today, I asked her what she thought, and to ask her, did you know David was going to play the idol on Jess? She's like, no, I had no idea. I thought we were going to all be voting for Lucy. I thought me, David, Ken, and Jessica were voting for Lucy, and Jessica's the only one who was voting for Cece. So I don't know necessarily if she felt like that she was completely back in the fold with everybody else in terms of voting out Cece. I don't know.
Which really shows what a piss poor Survivor player Cece is. Like, I have a lot of reactions to your exit interview with her that were just so frustrating. And I was so shocked to hear that she had applied like every year for how many years, she said.
Why? Why are you so down on Cece?
I mean, I wasn't as down on her until she said, like, oh, I never had this conversation with Chris to establish trust. She basically was like spiting herself that Chris tried to get rid of her. So her answer to being on a tribe, relying on someone who had previously tried to get rid of her, was to not talk to them and not try to make amends and
build
trust. She
said she's not
going to
be fake.
But then you go home. I mean, a lot of Survivor is being fake. It's like the Natalie Anderson school. Like, you're going to be fake until you can exact your revenge. You know, it's like,
yes,
to go to a new tribe and just think you can rely on Chris when you've been at the bottom of this tribe and there's every reason to send you home because you're the definite weakness, like, weakest person in the challenge, as told to you so many times by Jeff Probst whenever he can. To not try to move on that and to just sit and be confident that for some reason he's not going to vote you out is insane to me.
Yeah.
I gotta cool down. I'm like getting very
good.
Like, topic after topic. I'm just like, I'm sweating.
This is
supposed
stuff.
To be cold in Michigan.
Look, not everybody comes into the voicemail ready to go with a lot of strong opinions.
I'm always coming in hot, Rob.
Yeah, you're coming in hot. What about at that tribal council last night in terms of what Chris did? You liked him flipping over to the millennials?
I really thought it was a no-brainer for him in this respect, where he's been on the outside time and time again, and he comes in and he forms like an organic bond with Zeke, where like they really feel like they see eye to eye. Probably one of the first times he's felt that way, you know, in a long time on this island. And it's even more of a no-brainer because the opposite of Adam with Figgy and Taylor, with Chris, his two millennials are the reason, or his two Gen Xers are the reason that he lost the challenge. I mean, it's nothing to cut this dead weight. Cece had so many votes against her from all the previous tribals. Nobody's going to be upset even from the Gen X tribe that she's gone. And you stand a chance to keep your tribe from going again to tribal. Like, I thought Chris flipping was... The difference between David and Chris here is Brett is going to be pleased when he sees that Chris got Cece out. Dave's alliance, I don't know how Ken and Jessica are going to feel about him axing Cece, but Chris had no allegiance to Cece. So I think, if anything, he's only secured himself a better spot than he was in.
What do you think that Jess and Ken would have liked to have seen Chris voted out of the game in that spot?
I feel like Ken and Jess are very, I want to say, I feel like they would be very original tribe oriented. That they would want to see, okay, the Gen X's are in power, let's get rid of one of the millennials. And yeah. I think they're very like purist. Jessica is loyal to a fault to Lucy. I mean, she almost got her out of the game. And I feel like Ken, to a certain extent, is like very respectful of his original alliances. And to cut Cece like this may make him view Dave in a different light.
See, I think that Ken is going to be open to this. He's ready to openly work with Adam. So the idea of working with the millennials, especially like after the Survivor Summit, I think he's definitely on board with that. And Jessica, I think, would go pretty much wherever at this point. Anybody that would have her, I think she's going to be happy with, because there is no bigger Gen X alliance. Like, there is no group of like five or six Gen Xers that they're trying to get back to.
I mean, I guess that's true, but I feel like Ken's willingness to work with Adam may stem from desperation. He has no other choice. He's got to work with one of the millennials, but that'll be seen. I feel like a Republican candidate at the primary debate, like, you mentioned Survivor Summit, so now I can talk about it. I hated the Survivor Summit. I know this isn't my week to talk about it.
But, why did you hate it so much?
At some point, we will get to a voicemail, but I will not yield my time on the Survivor Summit.
Rock on.
I think, and I promise I will calm down after this.
Don't.
The only benefit to the Survivor Summit as it stood that I could see is to inspire suspicion amongst the other non-summiting tribe members. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm on the tribe and half my tribe goes to the summit, I'm thinking, all right, I've seen every season of Survivor, especially in the modern era. There is no way nothing is happening here. Okay, if there's no swap, they're exchanging some kind of thing, there's some kind of advantage happening here. I'm not trusting a single person who gets back from this, and I'm going crazy and targeting each and every one of them systematically. I am so disappointed. Like, I have to believe that this is the reason for the Survivor Summit, is to just lead people on a goose chase of
It was
suspicion.
A change-up. Yeah.
It's I can't believe it. I know
your timing.
How is like everyone just accepting these people back? No problem. Hope you enjoyed your PB&J. Good times with the other tribe. I would be like, they have a clue. I know it. Like, they have an idol. Like, they've agreed to share an idol. Like, something happened here.
I agree that it's unfathomable that nothing happened. It was just a party.
I can't, like, I thought that was genius. Like, have the producers cause this moment where the rest of the tribe is complete paranoia. It's complete, like, ludicrous suspicions. And that didn't even happen. I was like, all right, this was completely worthless to me.
You want this to be like the large bag of beans, where you come back with a very small bag of beans and say, no, I had the chance. I could have taken the clue. Here's the bag of beans that I got for the drive. It's like, oh, well, there's no way this is the big bag.
Hundo, this is like the Will Sim Survivor Summit or the Neutral Box Survivor Summit. Like, right. I wanted something I wanted some bullshit pre-merge paranoia, and I did not get it.
So let's get into talking a little bit about Michaela. We didn't get to talk about her a ton and this three tribe swap. So why don't we start off here with a voicemail from our good buddy, Humby.
Hey, Rob and Ali. This is Umberto calling from Miami. So I was looking into the episode, and obviously the best part of it was Michaela when she called out Jeff Bro saying that you did it wrong. And I happened to agree with it. We know that Survivor is not fair. Nobody says Survivor was fair. However, adding a tribe with a bitch starting from zero has proven to be very, very detrimental to that new tribe. If it wasn't for Davies and Sissy's challenge prowess, they probably would have lost. So, how do you feel about Michaela calling out props? And do you agree with her? By the way, I'm calling it. The success or not of this season depends on how long Michaela stays on Survivor. She's just great.
Okay. Humby is the president of the Michaela fan club. Did you like when Michaela called out Jeff Probst? This is what she said to Jeff about going to the Ikabula tribe.
Michaela, you still seem unhappy right now.
You didn't do this right, Jeff. Just saying.
All right. Fair enough. I'll take it.
Jeff was very earnest about that.
I will say Michaela was my winner pick, but, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, it doesn't make a sound. Like, I didn't tell anyone, so.
Okay, so you're saying whatever. That you were the leader of the Michaela bandwagon before Humby.
No. I like to share in that with Humby. I will say I did not like, I love when people call out Jeff. I think Michaela joins like the illustrious ranks of, you know, Penner getting mad at me. Like I love that.
My ass.
I think this was the wrong time. I think in a swap like this, you're supposed to handle this like the people you're with, the situation you're in is the best possible situation you could have gotten, whether or not that's the case. I actually did think Michaela was going to go home. I have in my notes, come on, Michaela, don't go home over this. how wrong I was. But I do think it was the wrong time. That said, I think I'm okay with giving a third tribe, having to start from scratch. Only from a viewer's perspective, I think some of the best drama and episodes we got from Second Chance was on the Angkor tribe. So whether it's fair or not, as Humby said, like, who cares about fair and Survivor? I think they tried to give, okay, you get a six tribe member. I don't know how much that balances it, considering they had way more than six people when they initially built their shelters. But from a viewer's perspective, I like the third restart tribe. And I think Michaela could have handled it better from a strategic perspective. But from an entertainment perspective, it's always great to see someone snap at Jeff.
Okay, so you are super high on Michaela. She's your winner pick. I talked about how I think she's outstanding casting, but I am going to say that I am not high on her as a winner of this game and of this season because I believe that she has no poker face. With all due respect to Lady Wawa, she has no poker face. Yo.
I think that's true, but I do think she has the respect of the people she's with. Certainly this new tribe, they definitely, I think she has a story where you just, you can't help but respect her. As someone who, like, could have the wambulance called on them at any moment, and I'm talking about myself, all I do is cry over stupid shit. Michaela seems to only break down when there's reason, and you see Brett, like, really feeling respect for Michaela to borrow from, you know, Ken on this, and I do think that goes far, and I like that she's honest. I like that she's honest with the tribe. I feel like you can take her at face value, and in Survivor, often it can be better the devil you know than the devil you don't. And with Michaela, if you can build some trust with her, I think what you see is what you get. Could she go home at any time? Yes. But do I see a path to the end for her? Also, yes. I'm Taryning it right now.
Yeah.
I'm Fancy McFencerton.
Look, you are not Fancy McFencerton on this podcast.
I'm in trouble. I'm never getting asked back, but you know what? Go hard or go home, right?
Yeah.
No, go out with a bang.
So yeah, that's really what Michaela's viewpoint has been, where she's not going to, you know, walk on eggshells. And I guess that we're going to find out, I guess, at some point, if she ends up in a merge tribe with Ken, that these two are not going to coincide and work well together.
That's interesting. I guess I'm just hoping Ken gets voted out before that happens.
All right. Here's a question from Millennial Anthony. He wants to talk more about the reaction that Michaela had to going to the Ikabula tribe.
Rob, this is Millennial Anthony, and I have a question about Michaela. What's Michaela's reaction to the tribes, Rob? The most extreme reaction that we've ever seen on the show. That she's so pissed that she got a bad draw from a tribes, Rob. She's so pissed that she got swapped onto the tribe, that she had to start all over again. She had to build a shelter. She had to start from scratch. That she's so pissed that she decided to tell Jeff off and say that, Jeff, I think you've done this wrong. Pissed.
I think he's pandering to me. I'm a big Paul fan, so I loved all those pissed. That's friendship right there.
It's friendship. All right. So just to, I believe there was a germ of a question there, and it was this the most negative reaction anybody has ever had to the tribe swap?
I will say that I love being on the voicemails, but on my podcast, I'm able to curate the questions, and I always get rid of the, like, is this the first time? Is this the most? Because, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's the most that I can remember in terms of, like, calling out Jeff over it. What I like and appreciate about it from Michaela is that it seemed to end on the mat there, or the lack of mat there in front of Jeff. And when she got back, she's the one who made fire. She's the one who scored the baskets. You know, it wasn't like she gets back to camp and she can't stop complaining about it. So for that, I'll say, if you're going to get it out on someone, better to get it out on Jeff. I will have to default to you. Is this the evolution of tribe swapping? Is this the worst we've seen?
I do believe that probably this is the saltiest we've seen anybody get at a tribe
swap. I'm a millennial of you.
Yes. I would say that perhaps Boston Rob did not take it well when he was swapped away from Amber, and did have, you know, a bit of the crybaby-itis about that, and then did paint the letter A on his arm as he was separated from Amber, and then go into the whole thing that sets up the move to screw over Lex. So probably I would say that that was the ultimately longer, more emotional reaction to a tribe swap. But this was certainly, I think, the most salty in the moment.
Can I ask you a Boston related question?
Sure.
Do you agree that Brett is just like one octave away from being the best Boston Rob impression you've ever heard?
I would have to listen to it. Let me see. I can look and see if I can bring up one of his secret scenes, and we can see if he has that. You think he sounds like a voice double? Is he higher or lower than Boston Rob?
Let's do it. That's my bad, Boston Rob. I think he is one octave higher, and I'm not a musician, so maybe it's two octaves. He's like one decibel higher than Boston Rob.
One decibel higher than Boston Rob.
I'm in trouble here. Okay. Musicians and sound engineers, you're gonna come for me.
Okay. So on this past week's episode, here is a clip from Brett on the secret scenes.
I hope my buff, and it's a green buff, and I know I'm going to the tribe without a shelter. So I'm just like, whatever. And then I was like, well, maybe it's one of those survivor things where you go there and they have everything built for you already. It was a joke, and there'll be food waiting.
Yeah, I can hear it. He's like Rob on like 1.25.
Like a half a suck of helium, and he'd be Brett.
Yeah. Because Rob also talks slow also. It's like, you know, going into the tribe swap, I would have thought we would have had a shelter. And so he's slow. So Brett is, you know, he's higher and faster. So he's like Rob on 1.25. 1.5 even.
Not to put you on the spot, but can you give us some Brett?
You know, going into the tribe swap, yeah, I thought, wow, we were gonna have a shelter. You know, I'm just trying to do it higher and faster. Again,
that was great. I was very impressed.
So we'll see. Again, early in the season, working out the kinks on a lot of these impressions of these people. Let's do one more question about Michaela real quick. This is from John.
Hey, Robin, Allie, this is John in Tucson. There's no question that Michaela had a Mick killer episode last night.
Amazing.
She was able to start fire after Jay and Brett were not. She had a great confessional right afterwards with amazing personal content, and she absolutely beasted the shooting portion of that challenge. When was the last time you can remember someone having this great of an episode all around, factoring in edit and gameplay? What are your thoughts?
Now I feel stupid because you said you would have caught this question and Mick killed it.
No, this is a great question because I would say Adam last week.
Adam last week. But, you know, she didn't do anything strategic in the game. I mean, they didn't go to tribal council. She didn't even get the fishy this week. Isn't that the barometer?
Or is it just like not getting the cesty, which is better for your gameplay? Yeah, I mean, we didn't see too much. I think if anything, like that just shows how great Mikayla is that we get so much screen time from her without anything happening on her tribe. Mm-hmm. I do think though, if the green tribe went to Ikabula, Ezekiel bread, whatever it is,
Zikabula.
If they went to, that's what I, the first thought he said, like Ezekiel Bula, but I have to get my ears clean. If the green tribe went to tribal council, I do think it's the millennials would have definitely gotten rid of Sunday or Brett. So I don't even think, even if they lost, we would have seen Mikayla doing some gameplay. I don't know that that's even her strong suit, but I remember you talking about like the biggest thing you got from a Michelle win last season is to not discount likability. And I really do feel like Mikayla is likable, at least on TV. If that translates to the tribe, I'm not sure. It seemed like she had a warm reception this week, but I guess only time will tell.
Only time will tell. All right. So let's take another question. So we're talking about who's the most likable, but let's look at the other side of that coin with a question from Mary from Buffalo.
Hey, Rob and Allie, it's Mary from Buffalo. Allie, this past season on The Challenge, we saw a really devious move from MTV villain Johnny Bananas. But so far on this season of Survivor, it seems like everyone's playing pretty nice and no one's really stepped out as a huge villain. My question for you guys is, who do you think has the most villain potential or who is most likely to betray their ally to further their own place in the game? Thanks. Love you, Baze.
Okay. Is there a villain of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X?
That's tough because it's really early. Similarly to like to when you watch The Challenge, not you, and the general you, like the five people who watch The
like
Challenge.
Like the letter you?
I'm a millennial, sure.
The royal you.
when the minority of the population watch The Challenge, Brian and I talk a lot about the game of chicken back and forth. Like it's too soon to make a move in the early game. And I think that goes chicken Morrissey's a wrap. I think it's too soon to tell with how many episodes we've had. I would say right now, based on the edit, Adam and Dave, I mean, I think Dave has clearly demonstrated an ability to cut his alliance members and also make these outrageous moves. His idol plan, Jessica, was, as you've already discussed at length, like insane. And that's, to me, a sign of somebody, not necessarily someone who's loyal, but somebody who's just willing to make these moves. I think his Jessica save and CC vote out together just make him seem more erratic than loyal or strategic. But I'm going to say Dave is most likely to act on this. I also think that if it's the right play at the right time, Adam's able to see kind of the strategic benefit to certain moves. So I would say that, I mean, am I overlooking someone?
No, but I disagree with you on both counts of Adam and Dave as the villains, that I think that Adam has been seen in a very flattering light. I think it'd be hard for the show to make this pivot and have him be seen. Like you could be strategic and also still be a good guy on the show, like the Spencer 1.0 that we've compared him to a few times. And David, while he's been very strategic, I think that they're still showing him in the Cochrane-esque light. I know not everybody loves Cochrane, but I think that the show is still portraying him very positively.
Okay, I totally misinterpreted the question. You're totally right. I just started thinking of it more of like who's going to be willing to betray their alliance.
Oh.
But you're right. I don't think if either of them doing so is not going to be portrayed by the editing as a villainous move.
I think
so. Mabi,
the closest we have to villains in this season, I believe, are Figtails.
I was gonna say, ding! Wait for it. No, you're totally, You're totally right. I'm just in terms of betraying
your
alliance.
Are you rock on or screw that?
I'm friendship.
Okay.
Rock on.
I think, right. I don't think Figgy or Taylor are going to betray each other or betray Jay. I think Jay's more likely to betray that. Like, I'm thinking of it too much as like a villain means betraying your alliance. Like, the question threw me.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, clearly Figgy and Taylor are not meant to be liked. And, so I agree with you there.
Yeah. It's interesting that we don't have anybody who's like, and look, that's a pretty weak sauce villain so far in this season. So we don't have a major antagonist. I think Paul was going to be that guy and then he got taken out too soon. So right now we just don't have that player in the mix.
Pissed.
Yeah. Screw that.
Screw that.
So we'll see if maybe somebody develops into that. Actually, and while we're on the subject of Figgler, let's go ahead and take one more question from Pipe It Down.
Hey, Rob, I was wondering, in their preparation for Survivor, do you think maybe Taylor and Figgy went to a little bit too much therapy, learned how to get along with each other a little bit too well? Just want to get your thoughts. Bye.
Yeah. So Jeff had some interesting thoughts about what was going to be going on for these tribes, Allie. So he described the swap as the one part of the game you can't control, as opposed to the many other parts of the game that you can control.
Well, there are so many elements to the game of Survivor. Knots and puzzles you can practice in your backyard. You can go to therapy, learn how to get along with people better.
What? What are people going to therapy before they go on Survivor?
I think we're seeing here why the Jeff Probst show failed. I mean, it's like Jeff has clearly no concept of what happens in therapy. But I will say also, like, I just thought this whole setup was maddening. Like, everyone waits for Jeff to say, drop your buffs. And instead, he's like, you can get tweets from Colin Stone and find out what puzzle is going to be on the next challenge. Like, you can, you know, whatever. Like, you can go to therapy and work out your daddy issues. Like, I had no concept of where he was going with this. If anything, I give credit to Jeff for just, we all knew the swap was coming. So this almost took me completely off track of what was going to happen.
Like, what do you work on in therapy where it's like, hey, I really like to be on Survivor. I sent in a tape and I'm here to work on some of my issues so that I can win Survivor. I think you have probably a number of other issues that maybe need to be addressed before you get to whatever conflict management you need to talk about.
Even on a more basic level, to like walk in to like hire a therapist to be like, I have trouble getting along with people. Like, what does that even mean?
So many elements to the game of Survivor. Knots and puzzles you can practice in your backyard. You can go to therapy, learn how to get along with people better.
But people a little like a nervous laughter.
More just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. Has anybody done this? This is what I want to know.
Again, let us know in the comments if you've sought therapy because you don't know how to get along with people. I get a podcast and you'll figure out how to get along with people.
I don't know. It's an interesting note from Jeff in terms of setting up the tribe swap. Maybe it's like the 30-second tribe swap. Maybe he's just out of things to say.
Did we need... It's so iconic. Like, drop your buffs could be like a whatever triad word scramble Miles and I was talking about. It's so iconic. It almost like really watered it down for me. I was like pretty upset with the big drum roll from Jeff on this.
Yeah.
But I'm upset about everything, apparently.
Yeah. Then they have this whole big challenge, right? That's a setup, but then they don't do the challenge, right? Is that the challenge from last week? Like, what is the challenge that they're at?
I was very confused because I even had in my notes like challenge, and then it was a swap. I deleted challenge. Like, it's very confusing from a podcasting perspective. I have no idea where they rolled up on. I also thought it was pretty cheap that they didn't have a third mat. I get that they didn't want to spoil it. But when Jeff's like, go to that empty sand space in the between the two mats, I was a little bummed.
That was pretty cheap.
Do you think they'll have one for next time?
I don't know. I think one thing I was happy to see in the actual challenge is it seems like I'm happy they sprung for masks for everyone. So there was no Darnell issue.
Yes.
So I think they used all of their money on mass and no more money on mats.
Okay. So spend on masks, not on mats.
I don't make the rules. I just observe, you know?
Okay. All right, let's take another question. This is from Jeremiah, who wants to know about the performance of one of the survivors in the challenge.
Allie, Jeremiah calling in. How does David Wright's performance in the Immunity Challenge this week rank among the worst challenge performances in Survivor history? Others that come to mind for me are Jamie Newton with The Rock in Guatemala and Courtney Yates with The Sword in China. Thank you for taking my question, and all the best to you both.
I'm so sorry, Allie. Oh, I wish I would have screened these questions better to get rid of all of the historical questions.
Allow me to pivot on this question, if you will. All I have to say is with David's performance, the only thing that comes to mind is, please let me know if this is like way too crazy, but when Zeke says to Chris and Michelle left on the dock, is he throwing this? Only in my second watch did I begin to speculate that this might have been like a brilliant strategic move from Zeke, because Chris doesn't strike me as someone who would appreciate a challenge throw. And for Zeke to like plant that seed against his fellow Gen Xers, like, oh, is David throwing this? It was like a beautiful execution of like, I'm not telling you how to feel, but let me just suggest that Dave may be not trustworthy. Dave may not be in line with your values. So that was my interpretation of, you know, I'm not necessarily thinking of where Dave falls in line of like fellow F-ups and challenges, but I just was glued to Zeke saying that and so impressed. Am I like going way too crazy here?
That was some pivot. Wasn't that a good pivot? That was a good pivot. Didn't she do a good job? All right. So, yeah, that's a really interesting point. I mean, was it strategic shade that Zeke was throwing at David? It's possible, but I don't think it was that calculated.
Right. It may be like a happy accident, like to even just suggest that out loud.
Yeah.
Who knows, on like a subconscious level, but I was very impressed by that. And it was fortuitous that Chris is the one left on the mat. I don't think CC would have given a shit about that.
Yeah. So I do think it did help to create a further bond between Zeke and Chris, because they are similar, like from not just a geographic background, but also they have sort of the same philosophy on the challenges. And then they also like, you know, Zeke is hustling out there. And so they're both sort of like incredulous about David and CeCe. And boy, thank goodness for David that CeCe was bad in that challenge.
Yeah, I mean, well, can you field this one? Is Dave the worst challenge performance we've seen?
No, it definitely wasn't. I don't think that he was the sole reason that cost them, because there were two people that were equally bad in the challenge. And, you know, there's a long history of people that really become like the scapegoat because they did so poorly in one challenge. You know, that Courtney with chopping the rope was mentioned. You know, you go back to Ryan and Daniel in Survivor of the Amazon on the balance beam. There's a lot of stuff. So I don't think that we're going to talk about like 5 years from now, God willing, if Survivor is still on the air. Like, oh, remember when David couldn't capture all of the buoys? But perhaps maybe we might continue to think about this, as that moment has now been encapsulated in song by the great Shut Up Tim. Allie, tell me when you want me to hit the gong on this one.
He saw it rolling. He's chasing. David could not grab that buoy. He could not grab that buoy. He could not grab that buoy. David could not grab that buoy. He found a log. It had an idol, but it didn't help him catch that buoy. He couldn't catch that buoy. He couldn't catch that buoy. David could not catch that buoy.
That's disgusting.
Here's the thing. I don't get out much in law school. So if you're playing music, I'm just grooving here. I'm never going to gong it.
Rock on.
I thought that was beautiful. The thing is, the truth about water challenges is they give me such intense anxiety, because I am such a piss poor swimmer that I had to get like rescued by the lifeguard during a deep water test once in my youth. So I'm just like watching, like really more empathizing than anything. So I love the opportunity for Shut Up Tim to put this in song.
Thanks, Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, Shut Up Tim appreciates it.
Although, can I complain that I don't get, you know, Haley Strong gets a song, whom I love and would write many, many lyrics about, and I don't get a song?
Oh.
Do I have to just podcast about a popular show in order to get a song.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that a formal request is issued. All right. One more voicemail question for Allie. This is from Matt Wojcik. Has a question for you about another new reality show coming to CBS.
Salutations, Rob. And Rob is a planet. Big news in the game show world. Candy Crush is coming to CBS. What I want to know from all of you is, which Survivor, Big Brother, and Amazing Race contestants are we going to see on their respective crossover episodes? Type that into the comments, or think about that while you're playing that game and listening to this voicemail while you're on the train. Sayonara.
Allie, do you know anything about this?
Can I be like Randy Bailey and just like totally eviscerate questions? Just like ban that person. What is happening?
So CBS has optioned a new live action game show called Candy Crush based on the popular mobile game that the millennials are playing.
I'm going to wait for you to say more on this. I have absolutely nothing to say about this.
Yes. All right. So because of the success that ABC is having with game shows like Match Game and Celebrity Family Feud, okay, what they're saying is that Candy Crush lends itself perfectly to the kind of larger than life physical game shows. So it's going to be, I think, somewhat like Wipeout, but it's Candy Crush.
What a success that was.
Yes. Yes. After Angry Birds was adapted into a movie, then Candy Crush is now going to be a new CBS game show.
I mean, to even put this in the same conversation as classic game shows like Match Game and Family Feud is an insult to your youth and my game show network.
All right. So you...
I'm going to get all... Am I going to get hated on for hating on Candy Crush?
I don't know. Like, is it going to be worse than the backlash against Taryn Armstrong for coming out so strongly against Friends?
That I don't support. I just want to be, I'll shit on everything else. I will not. Gilmore Girls and Friends, I understand, are untouchable.
All right. So I guess, do we want to see Challenge Beasts, or then do you want like David Wright in the mix on Candy Crush?
There's like a 0.00% chance that I watch this game. So why don't, is there going to be a podcast on this? Then maybe I'll watch it.
If they did a Survivor crossover episode. It sounds a bit like, speaking of Taryn Armstrong, a little bit like American Ninja Warrior.
How does Candy Crush sound? And okay, I mean, what am I supposed to say here? Who's going to be on it?
Who do anybody I wanna you want to see on Candy Crush?
I did notice on Instagram, like, Candy Crush is making a big play to get reality stars to like tweet, like, I made it to level 400 on Candy Crush.
Yeah.
I mean, good for them. Okay. I really don't know. I've never been speechless in my life. I couldn't care less about this.
All right. If anybody has any suggestions for Candy Crush contestants, let us know in the comments. All right. Here's something that just got sent across my desk. Jason Weatherholtz at Jason Gator Claw on Twitter sent me a video that he recorded that he says that he can hear a producer laughing in a confessional that was on the show last night. Do you want to see if this is actual factual or actual craptual?
I want to take one issue with the fact that you don't come for Jason Gatorclaw, but you give H Strong underscore problems. Anyway, yes, let me hear this producer. Why?
What's the problem with Jason Gatorclaw?
Isn't that your whole thing? Shouldn't it just be your name? Where is Jason Gatorclaw coming from?
Well, maybe Weatherholtz is too hard to spell. Here is last night's confessional. See if we can hear a producer laughing.
I open up my buff and I see green. Man, I was pissed. You gonna send us to an empty beach where we gotta make the shelter and we don't have any food? I just wanted to flick them off right there, but I didn't.
Yeah, the Michaela confessional, I heard it a little bit. I'm not sure if that was a producer or exactly what that was. But, you know, the Michaela confessional, I think the trademark is it's very measured. This is Michaela going back a couple of weeks talking about Figgy and Taylor hooking up.
In the middle of the night, I hear a kiss sound and I was like, y'all can't be for real. You stink. Your mouth is nasty. You got sand in your drawers and you kissing somebody. That's disgusting. Yeah.
She's like really good at like the bullet pointed list in her confessional.
Yeah, someone who's never been described as measured in their life. I have a lot of respect for Michaela. I also thought she was about to be like, and I was like, brr. But we missed that.
if we were going to ask Michaela about the new Candy Crush video game coming to CBS, her confessional might be, you're telling me this mobile phone game from the iTunes store, TV show wannabe, thing people are playing on the train. She's got like a list. I want to track this if we can see the rest of the season.
Maybe that's why she's so likable. Everyone loves a well-organized list. Am I right?
She could go work at BuzzFeed when she gets done with Survivor.
A listicle?
Yeah.
Millennials live for those.
That's why she's on the millennial tribe.
I'm all in. Give me a Michaela listicle all day.
All right, Michaela listicle. All right. Are you ready for a listicle of all of the Survivor social media?
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay.
You know I'm hoping for Rupert tweets.
Well, I have some bad news for you.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I wasn't optimistic.
Sorry to say. All right, first off, let's just get into it with the proper jingle from Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby, tweets, millennial tweets. They're better than watching college football with Zeke. Tweets.
Yeah.
I disagree only because my Northwestern Wildcats beat Michigan State last weekend, which was huge. I know that's not what anyone gives a crap about, but...
Do you watch a lot of football?
Well, I'm here at the University of Michigan, so I'm like obligated to, but always, my heart's always with the Wildcats.
All right. Thank you to Ryan Elder at Ryan Elder Music once again for that. All right. Let's check in with some of the social media. Jessica Figueroa at hashtag Figgy tweeted, secrets are no fun. Secret lovers, however, ...
Rob, we're going to have to take a break for me to mop up all this vomit that I just spewed everywhere. My God.
Did you happen to see this week that Figgy posted a video onto YouTube where Figgy read mean tweets that were sent to her?
Wow. You're not famous enough to be on Jimmy Kimmel, Figgy, but
yeah,
good for her for like laughing with the audience.
Yes. Figgy is going through the singular experience of being on Survivor and having people say things about her on social media. So she needed to respond to the mean tweets for at hashtag Figgy.
Should I do that after this podcast with the inevitable hate on again?
Please do. Yes. I don't know if that's necessary.
We'll see.
I don't know. Okay.
We'll see.
Why would I wasn't talking about you. No. All right. This is from at Randy Bailey. Last week's show, you know, Allie, I still feel terrible about what happened with Randy last week.
Honestly, I feel like that's how you can communicate with Randy best is like by being mean to him. I think he appreciates it.
Okay. Randy Bailey at Randy Bailey 1720. Randy, again, if you're listening, I'm very sorry about how things went last week. He tweeted out, David should now immediately tell Zeke he has the idol and play it for CC at Tribal Council. That would make at Eliza Orleans happy.
I support Randy. I have no idea what that meant. So what is he actually suggesting? Are we supposed to break this down or just like let the tweet wash over us?
I think that he is referring to her results Orleansiated thinking.
That he should play it on CC? That doesn't. How does that affect the decision to play it on Jessica?
Because she liked the move that he played it on Jess so much last week.
Oh, Randy's going to be pissed at me for not understanding this. I'm sorry, Randy.
Okay, you're next to get it. All right. He also said, so Fishback-esque of at the Michaela B crying like a baby over starting a fire.
Shots fired. You know, I don't have a problem because I got big timed by the fish.
Yeah. Could you set that up that we were talking about that right before we came on?
Oh, I forgot that wasn't on air. Yeah, no. So you very generously plugged that I was doing the voicemails at the end of Know It Alls as you normally do. And you, I would maybe say mistakenly left airtime for Steven to respond to such an unknown like me coming on the podcast. And you're like, Allie Lasher's coming on the voicemails. How about that? And I was listening on 2x speed. So even the dead air was apparent to me on double the speed.
All right. Well, let me see if I can play that clip. If you bear with me, give me a second. All right. So here's the clip. This is at the end of the show when I was teasing that this podcast was coming up. Join us for our next podcast. Well, I'll have the exit interview coming up next, but then our recap with Kimmy Kappenberg. Email some questions in survivor at robthewebsite.com or for the voicemails, Allie Lasher on the voicemail today, Stephen.
That's exciting.
Yeah, very fun. So you feel like he no-sold you, which is very exciting.
I'm always going to put the blame on you. Like, how dare you think that Steven would give a one single crap about me being on the voicemails? But it was very disheartening.
This is fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, sorry about that, Allie. I won't throw it to Steven in that spot anymore.
Whatever. C'est la vie, you know.
This is also Randy. He says, I knew this was going to happen almost 8 years ago. And then he tweeted a picture of him writing CC for Crystal Cox.
Love it. Classic Randy.
And then also he wrote, just transitioned from Millennials versus Gen X to 2016 debate. It appears to be the same show. Idiots fighting with idiots.
Is that a Rob Sister Nina ripoff, or did you rip off Randy?
Nah, I'm pretty sure.
Same vein.
Pretty sure I posted it before we got the tribal council. So yeah. So I mean, it was a layup joke. Okay. Also then Darnell Hamilton, King Darnell, he said, oh Lord, more goggles. He was not happy to see more goggles this season.
Love goggles.
See, we had I would have expected him to be pissed, like, oh, now you get goggles for everyone.
Yeah. He said, so now they give the contestants more than one set of goggles. WTF.
Perfect.
And also he said, I just noticed that those goggles are a big upgrade over ours.
I'll take his word for it.
Yeah. Okay.
One thing, can I quickly say,
yes,
props to the props department this season. How do they get that idol into that log? Like, I couldn't, you know, it looks
like
very organic.
It must be like paper mache.
I think it looks pretty good. I'm not an expert.
Yeah. All right. Penner tweeted last night during the episode, no live tweeting tonight. Had the pleasure and honor to be reading Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf aloud with the inimitable Sherilyn Finn.
Cool.
Yeah. I have a cold, so my penner is extra on point.
That's exciting. Like, in response to Ben or not you, to borrow from Steven Fishback.
That's exciting.
T-Bird, at T-Bird Cooper, she tweeted earlier today about how happy birthday to two of her favorite people, at Rob Sesternino and Snoop Dogg.
You're in great company. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So there we have that going on. And T-Bird, she will be our recap guest on the podcast next week. So after we do the live know-it-alls at Caroline's on Broadway, I know that you have the no-mo, Allie.
Yeah, sorry, I'm distracted by realizing that Snoop Dogg's half birthday is 420, but...
so is mine.
I have, I don't know. You haven't publicized it as much. You're interested in that. But
not as much.
Anyway, I have some major FOMO. Somebody who has had easy access to, and this is going to be a big like ambulance call for everyone else in other parts of the country who travel in and fly in for these know-it-alls events. But I have had the luxury of working like a block from Caroline's every year that you've done know-it-alls. And now I'm in Michigan and you're doing not one know-it-alls event, but two. I'm like very, very upset.
Call the ambulance. Yeah.
I deserve it.
You said FOMO now, but you said no-mo in the pre-show when we were getting set up.
Well, as anyone who's listened to any podcast or even this podcast knows, I'm easily aggravated. And I'm to the point where I don't have a fear of missing out. I know I'm missing out and I'm upset. So it's K-O-M-O, capital K, lowercase N, just so you know, it's no-mo as opposed to como. Like, como is misleading.
And I had said that I thought it should be K-N-O-W-M-O.
I mean, you're the marketing expert here. Like, you've built an empire.
I think you'd be like trying to explain to everybody of como. What is that? Konomo?
Look, you get it or you don't.
Yeah.
You're in or you're out.
You're in or you're out. Okay. All right. So T-Bird, she's going to be with us next week on the podcast. I'm going to be talking to her on Thursday. And then voicemails, Antonio Mazzaro will join me on Friday when I get back to LA on next week's voicemail show.
My jealousy knows no bounds here.
Yeah, you're supposed to say that.
That's exciting.
You know, I'm genuine and I'm genuinely excited for those two podcasts. I have so little. Steven Fishback has so much.
T-Bird said, at hashtag Figgy, smart girl. Yep, at Taylor Stalker, stay away.
Okay, that's exciting.
She's like the chaperone of this tribe.
That's exciting.
Like leave, what is it? Like leave room for Jesus?
Leave room for the Holy Spirit. Yeah. How about this? Gen X Jerv. Gen X Jerv ended up tweeting out last night about...
I thought that was a fan account.
No, at Say Jerv. He said, does Adam look like a young at Rob Sesternino or is it just me?
That's just Gen X Jerv.
There's a lot of that from Stephen Fishback saying one of the Australian Survivor contestants looks like me. It's always a young me. Nobody ever looks like, oh boy, that looks like you currently. It's always like, no, you. That looks like what you used to look like.
Who's the Gen X, who's the Australian Survivor who looks like you? I got you Google cubed up. Nick
Iadanza.
Did I say queued up?
Yes.
Nick. Okay. Australian Survivor. Here we go. Images. Oh, interesting. I'm going to still say no, but more than Adam.
More than Adam.
Yeah. Oh, wait, here in this one photo.
Yeah. I can see the Nick thing more than the Adam thing. Don't paint Adam with that brush. He doesn't need that.
To be the Amazon Rob Sesternino is definitely not a bad thing.
That's exciting.
But I just don't see it.
All right. Nick Majorano, he says, failure on Survivor makes me so thankful I never gave into Michelle's advances on season 32. We would have been Mick and Feckless.
Ding.
That's a deep poll, right?
That's exciting.
Eric Reichenbach, that he tweeted out, Ikapula means screwed in Micronesian.
Spoken like a true super duper scooper fan.
Super duper scooper. How about this? My friend Dina Bennett said, unwritten rules of Survivor, be attractive or interesting or just badass like Michaela. Get playbook to Vanua.
Is she competing with Haley's rules for success on Survivor?
I don't know. I think Michaela is all of those things.
Yeah, I'm all in on Michaela.
Yeah, triple threat. Brian Corridan from the Wine and Cheese Coalition. He says, note to future Survivor players, all caps. When people who look like Dave are cast, it's because they are wily. Vote them out. I mean, come on, duh. That's profiling.
People say that every season. Like, if you're not gorgeous, there's a reason you're cast, but... I don't know that ever comes to fruition on the show. Like, does anyone ever act on that?
No. Except Ozzy.
Fair enough.
And then, let's see. Alexis Maxwell, she actually did get a chance to watch the episode. And so,
thank God.
I don't have Rupert tweets. Do you want the Alexis Maxwell tweet game?
I mean, I told you my heart belongs with the Wildcats. I definitely want the Alexis Maxwell tweets.
So, if you are ready... Let's get into
tweets, baby tweets.
Alexis Rupert Maxwell tweets.
They're better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Alexis Maxwell tweets. Yeah. All right. So here we go. Alexis Maxwell, her DVR did record the episode this week.
Hallelujah.
All right. So here we go. This is tweet number one. Hashtag drop your buffs on Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. It's always a great time for those on the bottom to gain new life. Okay?
I'm writing it down. I don't want to have you have to repeat them.
Okay. Number two. I'll do it in the Rupert voice. OMG, Michaela crushing it. She's NBA. So she's the league.
I'm going to just give you my thought. Well, I'll wait.
Okay. Number three.
Oh boy, I'm nervous for Figtails. Is that how that's spelled?
Okay, a little meta. And number four,
I know I'm late, but OMFG. I can't believe Dave got another idol. He should play the lottery.
All right. Three of those were Alexis Maxwell tweets. One was the one Survivor-related Billy Garcia tweet from last night.
This is tough because I'm tempted to be baited in, like, to be... brought in by the difference in OMG and OMFG as in two different tweeters. But I am under the impression that Alexis would be watching late based on her preference for the DVR. And so her saying, I know I'm late on this, I feel like is her. So I'm eliminating four on those grounds. And then I did think that the NBA tweet would also be Alexis, because I'm being sexist and would think that she would say NBA instead of WNBA, but maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe that's Billy's. Let me think. The first one's pretty basic. I also think in terms of who would be, although Billy did have a whirlwind romance out there.
Yes, he did.
I still think Alexis is more likely to be pulling for Figgy and Taylor. So I'm going to eliminate number three if I'm identifying the Billy tweet. Oh, let me go number one for Billy.
Number one is the Billy Garcia tweet. And I would have to say...
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yes, woo! Nailed it. That was the Billy Garcia tweet from last night. Good work.
Two months of legal analytical training will get you everywhere on this podcast.
Yes. Okay. And then for the bonus points, okay?
Yes. Love bonus points.
Billy Garcia's 87,000 followers. How many favorites Thoughts. Did it's always a great time for those on the bottom to gain new life?
All right, he has 87,000 followers. Let me say 32 favorites.
Only three. But wow. Again, he might have been watching like East Coast and they might be West Coast. So that might be what it comes down to.
Are okay. you one of them as someone who like bookmarked this for this?
I'm going to favorite. I'll favorite it now.
Okay.
And we'll get that up to four. Okay. All right. Allie Lasher, the great Allie Lasher, at Lash Tweets on Twitter. No shame in that Twitter name.
Rob, it's been great. Great talking to you. I'm sure this will be my last time.
No, why do you say that? Why do you say that?
It's just, I'm drenched in regret.
Why?
We'll see. Let's leave it to the commenters.
Okay. We have so many different ways to go on the hashtag. All right. What do you think? You have anything off the top of your head?
I would say, there's been some discrepancy on Nomo. What else? I've discarded my notes. Let me go back. You have anything?
Hashtag lore module.
Oh, that's a classic now.
Hashtag Zika Bula.
I like lore module.
Hashtag Nomo.
Are there people using hashtag lore module in the Pokemon Go sphere?
I have a feeling people are probably, talking about lore module.
All right, if we're going to say Nomo, how are we spelling it?
You could either do K-O-M-O or K-N-O-M-O or
I'd like to,
K-N-O-W-M-O.
I'd like to decide because when I feverishly search this tomorrow to see how people feel about me, I don't want to have to search three.
Okay. So do K-N-O-W-M-O.
All right, Rob. Your podcast, your rules, you know. Happy right. birthday. That's my gift.
Very exciting. All right. Allie, thank you again so much. Really great job.
No, thank you. It's really, honestly, always a pleasure to come on here. It's always a blast.
All right. And you could hear Allie on the finale of the RuPaul's Drag Race. Was it a good season of RuPaul?
It was a great season. And huge shout out to Brent Wagamont and Mike Bloom for picking up my slack. It was very, very fun. We had a great time. I highly recommend it.
All right. And then when is the challenge coming back?
So the challenge is filming now. And I have no idea, but I predict 2017. So I officially start my podcast vacation today.
That's exciting.
Well, your podcast sabbatical.
Yes.
Don't be too much of a stranger.
And look, when I get the call, you know, it's like the bat signal. I get the rap signal, the rehab signal, and I come on.
Okay. Well, good stuff. All right. So thanks so much to Allie. We're going to be back with some BBOTT coming up on Friday night to get into it. You're not down with OTT, right?
Oh my God. It's been a dream to be able to say, yeah, you know me, but I am not watching.
I'm sorry. You do not know me. I will not be watching the OTT. All right. So we will go through all of that on Friday and then get back into the Survivor Rundown coming up after the weekend with Josh Wiggler on Monday. And why CC lost with David Bloomberg before we get into our live show at Caroline's coming up on Wednesday night. Again, no live know-it-alls. We'll be having the audio and video version posted shortly thereafter on Wednesday night. And of course, thanks so much to the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast who make all of this nonsense possible. Find out more about being a patron at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Looking forward to reading your comments, even if Allie is not. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
He saw it rolling, he's chasing. David could not grab that buoy. He could not grab that buoy. He could not grab that buoy. David could not grab that buoy. He found a log.